I was hesitant to talk with you this morning about God and the IRS because we are, after all, 6 months away from April 15th, and I didn't want to spread any more gloom than was necessary this morning. Someone has noted that besides being tax day, April 15th is also the day that the Titanic sank and that Lincoln was shot. So April 15th has more than enough gloom for its own, and I didn't want to bring any of it into the middle of October. Arthur Godfrey, if you're old enough to remember who Arthur Godfrey was, he said, "I feel honored to pay taxes in America. The thing is, I would feel just as honored for about half the price." And someone else noted that the Eiffel Tower probably looks like what the Empire State Building will after taxes. God and the IRS, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. A familiar saying, a familiar encounter for us in the life of Jesus. The Pharisees were concerned about Jesus' growing popularity. They looked for ways to expose him as a charlatan and a fraud, and to paint him as a revolutionary who was a threat to the government. They sent their disciples to try to trap him. And they began with some high-sounding flattery. "Teacher," they said, "we know that you are true and that you teach the way of God truthfully. Tell us what you think. Is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor or not?" A perfect ploy. For the Pharisees, it was an ideal question. Would Jesus play to the gallery and try to please those who were standing around him and encourage disobedience to the government? Such boldness would have won him followers and won him great loyalty, but it would have also pit him against the Romans and against the Roman government. If, on the other hand, he sided with Rome, he would alienate all those listeners who stood around him, who objected to foreigners ruling their land. The Pharisees could not lose with their question for Jesus, and Jesus could not win. Matthew tells us, however, that Jesus was aware of their malice. "Show me the money for the tax," he said. And you know what happened. It is one of the best known object lessons in all of literature. Whose likeness and inscription is on this coin? It is Caesar's. Then return to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and give to God what belongs to God. Actually, most of us don't have any difficulty rendering unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. The truth is, we have very little choice. There was a trial not too many years ago of the son of a U.S. congressman. He had been charged with tax evasion, and the judge showed little mercy. "Our tax system depends upon voluntary compliance," he said. "Therefore, we send a signal to you and all others who would cheat on their taxes," and the son of the congressman went to jail for his infraction. Rendering unto Caesar is not a problem. If the government needs our taxes, we pay our taxes. If the government wants to put a road in and your house is in the way, you better look for another house. If Congress reinstitutes the draft, then start packing your duffel bags, young men, and perhaps young women too. What Caesar wants, Caesar gets. And most of us have no problem with that. For the most part, we are satisfied with the kind of government we have, and we are willing to pick up the tab within certain limits, of course. I personally wish that we had more leaders like Calvin Coolidge. Coolidge was frustrated with the idea of paying $25,000 for a new squadron of airliners. And he suggested this: why can't we buy just one airplane and let the aviators take turns flying it? They don't make them like old Cal Coolidge anymore. We joke about our government. We grouse and we complain, but we really wouldn't trade it for any other kind. Rendering unto Caesar is not a problem for us, as it was for many of those who walked with Jesus. Providing our government with what it needs and what it asks for and what it demands is something that we are perhaps grudgingly, but willing to do. But for many of us, rendering unto God is probably our greatest spiritual problem. A recent survey of members of leading denominations showed among the members who dropped out of the church that the number one complaint about the church they had was that the church talks too much about money. Well, you know, there's a reason for that, that the church talks about money a good deal. And the reason is this. Jesus talked about money a good deal. And he talked about the ways that we use our money more than he talked about any other single subject. That was the thing that Jesus talked about. But I'll offer you a prediction, and I hope my prediction is wrong. I predict that unless we intentionally address it, giving to God in the near future will be a continuing lower priority for Christians. And I think that will be the case for two reasons. Unless we intentionally address it, giving to God through the church will become less and less a priority, even for Christians. First reason is this. We as a culture are becoming increasingly materialistic, more and more so with the passing of every year. It is difficult to make payments on a Mercedes, a Rolex, a condo at the beach, and all the playthings that people think they must have, and still reserve 10% for God and the work of the church. We're like the little boy who in days past was given two quarters, one for Sunday school and one for an ice cream cone. And as he walked along the street, one of those coins slipped out of his hands and fell through the grate in the street and down into the drain far below. The little boy raised his face toward heaven and said with genuine sorrow, "Well, God, I guess there goes your quarter." We are increasingly materialistic. And by materialistic, I don't mean we have more or less, but materialism is founded on considering ourselves first and looking at ourselves first and our own needs and our wants. We are increasingly materialistic. But the second thing is this. There is something intrinsically seductive about money. The more we have, the harder it is to give. Money can cost us our souls, Jesus said. He said, you cannot worship God and money. Money is like a drug. It enslaves us as surely as cocaine does. So when Jesus devoted more of his teachings to warnings about the perils of great wealth than to any other subject, he was not saying that it's bad to own things. He's not saying that money is intrinsically evil, but he was warning us that if we are not vigilant, we can come to the place where instead of having money, instead of owning things, those things have us and those things own us. The worship of money is probably the most practiced religion in our land today. All of this was a lesson that was learned by a man named John Rockefeller. Rockefeller rode the great American dream. He drove himself hard to be a success. He became a millionaire by the age of 23. And by 50, he was the richest man on earth. And then at the age of 53, Rockefeller developed a serious illness which caused all the hair on his head to drop out. The hair on the top of his head, his eyebrows, his eyelashes, his beard, his mustache, all of it dropped away. Even though he was the world's only billionaire and he could have had anything on earth that he desired, he wasn't able to eat normally. All he could digest through his system was milk and crackers. He became shrunken like a mummy. He lost weight. He could not sleep. He would not smile, and nothing much in life meant anything to him at all. Doctors predicted that he would be dead within a year. One night, however, as he struggled by himself, all alone, to fall asleep, he came to grips with all of this. He realized that nothing that he had would sustain his life, and that he could take none of it into the next world. So the next day when he got up, he embarked on a new way of living. Rather than hoarding his money and his possessions, he began to give them away to persons in need. He established the Rockefeller Foundation. He channeled his fortunes into hospitals and research and mission work. His contributions led to many, many things, but among them, John Rockefeller's contributions led to the discovery of penicillin, to cures for malaria and tuberculosis and diphtheria. At age 53, John Rockefeller was given a year to live. But by learning to live by the principles of giving rather than the principles of getting, he altered his life dramatically. He altered his purpose for living. He put his priorities in order. And you know, he lived to the ripe old age of 98. For many, the worship of money is a profound and deadly spiritual problem. The more we have, the less able we are to give. The more things we own, the greater the temptation to allow those things to own us. In the movie, Oh God, that came out many years ago, the idea was advanced that the reason God did not give Adam and Eve any clothes to wear was because that God knew once they had clothes, they would want pockets. And when they had pockets, they would want money. The scriptures do not say that money is the root of all evil. It is not. Most of us would agree with Joe Lewis's famous words. I don't like money, actually, he said, but it calms my nerves. It is the love of money. It is the focus on money. It is the making money life's priority and life's goal that is the root of all evil. It is the worship of money that puts it and material things into competition with God. And that is what is deadly. Sooner or later in our lives, we have to make a decision. Is it truly God whom we worship? Is it truly God in whom we place our trust? Is Christ truly the Lord of our lives? And are we willing to surrender ourselves to Him? Once that essential decision has been made, then the question of how we use our resources, our time, our talents, our money, that question becomes an easy one. Those questions become easy ones once that initial one has been answered. And it's not to say that we have to give up our notions of prosperity. There's an interesting note in the writings of John Wesley. Wesley had a most enviable problem. He was committed to a life of relative austerity. Christ was indeed first in Wesley's life. He saw how material possessions could be a negative encumbrance to his work and his ministry. And yet, Wesley's work and his writings made him quite prosperous. With that in mind, he said on one occasion, I do not see how it is possible for any spiritual revival to continue very long. Religion must necessarily produce industry, and these cannot but produce riches. As riches increase, so will pride and anger and love of the world. Do you see the marvelous insight that Wesley had? When people are spiritually revived, when people are spiritually mature and growing in their walk with God, then they will live more responsible lives. And living more responsible lives cannot help but make you prosper, which is in turn a danger to their souls. You see, we are left with that more urgent question, that most urgent question. Is it really God and God's ways and God's work who are first in our lives? Does God deserve our best, or can we get by with giving God only our leftovers? Wise persons see that we are only temporary stewards of all that we have, for it all belongs to and eventually returns to God. Wayne Barrett said that the first time he ever saw a $50 bill, it was in an offering plate at church. And that was a long time ago when $50 was worth a lot more than it is now. Wayne is a nationally recognized leader in Christian stewardship, and he's the author of more than one book on church finances and how to manage stewardship in the local church setting. Seeing that $50 bill in the offering plate spoke louder to him than any words could have. He saw firsthand how important the church was to his parents and all the other adults in their congregation by the gifts they gave. It wasn't that those folks were wealthy, Wayne said. They weren't. They were simply committed. Seeing $50 and $20 and $10 bills in the offering plate taught young Wayne a lesson that he would remember the rest of his life. The work of the church is vitally important. Glenn Adsett was a missionary in China. A long time ago, he spent most of his life as a missionary and much of it in China. But he was in China at the time when practicing religion, especially Western religion like Christianity, became illegal. And he and his wife and their two children found themselves in the midst of a dangerous situation under house arrest, unable for months to leave their home. Finally, one day, the soldiers came and they said, "You may return to America." They were weeping and hugging each other and laughing and celebrating. And the soldier said, "You can take 200 pounds with you." Well, then it started. They'd been there for years, collected quite a household of things. They had lots to consider. The woman said, "We must take this vase. It is a beautiful ancient vase, a memento of China." And he said, "But my typewriter is brand new. We have to take the typewriter. And what about all my books? And what about our clothes? And how about the children's toys?" And on they went, weighing things, considering, arguing, putting things on the scales, taking them off, until finally, they had reached agreement. And there they had 200 pounds, right on the dot, 200 pounds ready to go. And the soldiers asked, "Ready to go?" "Yes, we're ready." "Did you weigh everything?" "Yes, 200 pounds. "Did you weigh the children?" "No, we didn't." "Weigh the children." And at that moment, everything else became nothing but trash. Trash to be left behind. As they left the country with not many belongings, but with the children. Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. God is not going to take hold of our things and seize them from us if we hold out on Him. Giving to what God is about in our world and what God is doing to the church, through the church, is really voluntary. But it comes down, it really does, come down to this final judgment and this simple decision. What are the important things in your life? And what is finally and ultimately only trash? Amen.